Technorama episode 412 for October 8th, 2014. Bring out your dead!
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I have a cart load of dead people and I need to dump it somewhere. Where's your nearest Soylent Green machine?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for October 8th, 2014. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and not with me tonight is not Craig Stepp. That's a double negative. That didn't work. However, I have several Craig candidates. We're interviewing for a replacement, I guess.
Is that what this is?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Tell me about your most prolific podcasting experience. Never mind.
No. No, we're not going to go down that road.
No, Craig is in San Diego. He said, I'll try to be on the show, but then his team members absconded him and went out to dinner. So he was unable to make it even from the hotel room. Instead, we have several voices which you may recognize.
Maybe.
I think I got them with the house too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
There's other host personalities lying around here somewhere.
There are.
I've been in a closet all this time. I'm out of the closet now.
Fabulous.
Awesome.
Do your introduction then, Mr. Anonymous Voice.
I am Ben Ragginton.
I am Michael R. Menengay.
And I'm Keith Lane.
And I feel like Technorama has come home because that opening you heard was recorded in 2006?
Yeah, right here in this studio.
Yeah. With other equipment, of course.
And now you own the studio. See? That's it.
I even brought my Joe Murphy bracelet back to the Joe Murphy Memorial here.
Wow, how cool.
So, yeah, a lot of things are coming full circle.
Truly, it's bizarre.
Couldn't have seen that years ago. So this is really fun.
This is the freakiest thing for me.
Yeah, he's not in the driver's seat.
And I don't know what to do with my hands.
Careful.
He's careful. He's massaging the table as we speak.
Wow. Alrighty, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back with the main part of the show. But first, we want to let you know what's coming up. We have Armageddon the movie. Could come true in real life. Where can you stick Windows 95 now? We'll let you know. And the ISS Mission 42 has a promotional idea.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with Astronomy Cast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
We're learning as we go.
Yeah.
I learned what the two channels over here bring the music down so you can actually talk.
Now you just have to figure out what the rest of the 80% of the board does.
80?
80. How about
99.9, yeah.
I'm not trying to scare him, okay?
Done and done. There we go.
Letters. Oh, we get letters.
You have to dance, too.
We get your letters.
It's important.
Every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today.
And the sound effects. Get ready for it.
And pull one out. Those letters. Those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh,
yellow.
Now, Ben, I believe you had a response to this also. This was in our final joke. Remember last week we had the 20 geek jokes that
right.
we had? And I was saying, I didn't quite get the one where Descartes walks into
a bar and the bartender says, would you like a drink? And Descartes says, I think not. And then vanishes in a puff of smoke.
And I didn't quite get it, but I didn't realize Descartes was the I think, therefore I am guy.
Right.
And Mark in Memphis also wrote us in for that. Thank you very much. He says, Descartes is I think, therefore I am guy. I love that.
And I had just told that joke last week. With a group of friends.
Oh, you, that's a coincidence.
You used it already?
Wow.
No, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And you didn't hear it here?
No.
I told him about it. In fact, because
I had just used the joke with a group of friends a couple weeks ago.
It was really funny because I walked up to him and said, oh, by the way, you know, Chuck was telling this joke. And I went, Descartes walks into a bar and he immediately starts laughing.
That's not the joke.
No. I think not.
We also have a feedback from Nick, one of our faithful listeners and contributing members. It says, regarding my comment about October and December, I closed with that. Why is October? Oct is the prefix for 8, but it's the 10th month.
And December is the prefix for 10. Yeah. And why is it 12?
What happened? Well, he came back and said, October and December are in their respective places because they were the 8th and 12th month respectively, because the Romans essentially didn't count the winter months at the beginning of the year. Now, I recall that the year started on the spring equinox.
Right.
And which is March.
It was from equinox to equinox.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So that would have made March the first month, which set you back 2 months. And then they line up, right? And he goes on to say that a lot of them were changed also. August is named after Augustus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And July is Julius. So they do have some Roman roots in the names. So he closes and says, I have no idea how someone counted rents and so on. How much do I owe you? 40 or 50 shekels? We really don't know. Thank you very much for the feedback.
Another letter from our listeners
today. Thank you, typing crew. We have plenty of mistakes that you can also reach us at if you want to get a hold of us. Chuck@chuckchat.com or... Technorama. Yeah, we still have a Technorama at chuckchat.com. That gets to both Craig and me. History time. Are you guys going to help?
Sure.
Why not?
Read along. On this day in history for October 8th, 2014. October 8th is the 281st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, which we'll talk more about in a minute. There are just 84 days remaining in 2014.
Wow. Really?
84 days.
Yeah, get your Christmas shopping done.
Okay. Well, it was on this date in 1582, sorry my dyslexia, that because of the implementation of the Gregorian calendar, this day, it does not exist in this year in Italy, Poland, Portugal, and Spain.
Get a new insurance calendar.
Yeah.
A telegraph line between Los Angeles and San Francisco opens on this date in 1860.
And I don't get to read.
He can't read. He doesn't have a monitor.
Okay.
That would help.
October 8th, 1871, four major fires break out on the shores of Lake Michigan in Chicago. Everybody's familiar with the famous Chicago fire, right? Mm-hmm. Peshtigo, which was very near to where I used to live. Peshtigo, Wisconsin. Holland, Michigan, and Manistee, Michigan, including the Great Chicago Fire and the much deadlier Peshtigo Fire.
KDKA in Pittsburgh Ford Field conducts the first live broadcast of a football game 93 years ago today.
Wow.
And Bruno Mars was there.
How about that?
Happy birthday goes out on this date to co-founder of Delta Airlines, Colette E. Woolman, born on this date in 1889.
Reverend Jesse Jackson turned 73 today.
Comedian, actor, and screenwriter Chevy Chase is 71. Wow.
Also turning 71, American author, screenwriter, and producer R.L. Stein.
Actress and producer Sigourney Weaver, she is 65.
Other birthdays today include 64-year-old Robert Cool Bell from Cool and the Gang.
Co-founder of Netflix, Reed Hastings, turns 54. I wish I was as rich as that man.
No kidding. And 1 year shy of three decades, American singer-songwriter, producer, and actor Bruno Mars.
How about that?
No kidding. That's a coinkydink.
No, it wasn't. I wrote the show notes.
So it was all a fix.
Yes, it is. Oh, the band isn't ready yet.
They're not done.
No, but you know, going back to the Gregorian calendar thing, On many Unix systems, there's a cal command to tell you the calendar, even on your Mac OS X.
Yeah.
And if you say cal 1582, October is compressed by 10 days.
No way.
But I just checked. It is not that way on Mavericks. Maybe it's because I'm not in Italy, Poland, or whatever the countries were. Spain. Maybe if I set my locale to Spanish, it will. Those 10 days will disappear.
Mm. Hey.
That was always my test, but I had to remember what year it was. All right, the band is marching away.
Well, which
my band? That's the way it was on this day in history for October 8th, 2014. Wow, kind of timed that all right.
No kidding.
And the good news keeps on coming.
We have news. We always have news. Oh, this is bad news. We should have done bad news, nobody. The Super Collider super broke. Now I need someone to go to IKEA and exchange it for a wobbly CD rack and some rancid meatballs. My girls had to teach me the second half of that phrase.
Uh-huh.
That's hilarious.
Pretty bad. Lotus 1-2-3 is now moving to the great recycle bin in the sky.
Oh.
What am I going to do?
I know.
What How can I function?
/ macro create. Or is this a / macro delete?
Yeah.
The name Lotus 1-2-3 may not mean much to you now, but mention in front of geeks of, well, our age.
Our age.
And they'll be transported back to an era when IBM ruled supreme and people could aspire to own hard drives without selling their firstborns.
Oh, those were the days, weren't they?
A 20 meg hard drive was a...
Oh my God.
20 meg.
I had 42.
My 1 meg hard drive was a huge thing.
Oh my God.
Thing.
Does anybody remember Symphony?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I had a... Was it Symphony or Framework? What was... Ashton Tate had two packages that they gave away free if you went to training. One was DBase 3.
Ooh. Oh, DBase. Yay.
DBase 2 was the user hostile prompt. There was nothing user-friendly about DBase 2. But DBase 3 had menus, at least. Anyway, IBM has been selling Lotus 1-2-3 until a year ago.
I can't believe that.
I can't. Who's buying that?
Who would buy that?
Well,
who,
exactly.
What does it run on?
I know, exactly. I mean, unless you're stripping it down and maybe running it as a program inside of a window, inside of a window.
Inside of a window, inside of a window.
Inside of a window, it's an app.
But once they stop selling it, they still continued support for 1 year. The 1 year is now up, and there's no more support.
What are we
and there
do?
Was much and, rejoicing.
And who is calling in for support?
Precisely.
That's what I want to know. Who called in for support?
Hence the rejoicing. You don't have some poor sod there with a manual trying to answer questions for people calling in on that.
Could you imagine,
I can throw that away.
Could you imagine being support for that?
There's one guy in Indonesia sitting there waiting for the phone to ring.
Exactly.
My livelihood is gone.
Sitting there playing Bejeweled all day long, waiting for the phone to ring.
Exactly.
And nothing happened today. Sign me up for that job.
No kidding.
As long as he's not being paid on commission.
Oh. Completed calls.
The weekly status report is this flat line. Look, I've reduced the number of calls to zero. That's funny if you used to run a help desk, I guess.
That was one of my first tech jobs. My first support jobs was I was doing phone support for Windows 3.1.1.
Oh my God!
Most awesome job ever. I sat on my couch all day long playing freaking Nintendo, the original NES, because that was the days.
Yes,
and waited for phone calls to come in. And 90% of them were people who lost their mouse. 90% of the calls.
How do you lose your mouse?
Because that was the big thing with Windows 3.1.1 was you lose your mouse. Your mouse.
Oh, you mean the cursor would go off the screen?
You'd lose your cursor.
I thought you were talking about losing the physical mouse on your desk.
No, the physical mouse. The actual mouse.
The cursor.
The cursor.
Okay. Yeah, and that was it. It was just trying to get people to get their cursors back.
Oh, my God.
Did you try turning it off and on again?
Exactly.
Pretty much.
Reboot. Did you reboot?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was another you'd get an application behind an application, and that would actually cause the cursor to stay behind one of the windows, because Windows was even bug free back then.
Hey, that's a feature.
How many floppies was it?
How many floppies?
On Windows 3.1.
3.1.1, that was...
No, Windows 3.1 or Windows for Workgroups 3.1.1?
It was Windows 3.1.1, basically. Okay. That was on 7, I believe. Was that right?
I know 95 was 17. And that seemed like a lot.
Yeah, it was. It was I think it was on 7 or 10. Oh, no, that was 3.5s. You're talking...
The 3.5s.
The 3.5s? Okay, the 3.5s, I think it was...
Those high density.
It was between 7 and 9, I believe, something like that. And then you had to... Well, anyway.
What was it that was WordPerfect on the 5 1/4? Was that 3 or 5 disks or something?
Oh, WordPerfect was on like 7.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it 7?
Yeah, 7 5 1/4 inch disks.
5 1/4,
like
I remember
4.1
that.
Or 4.2, and that seemed like a lot.
Yeah.
Didn't I just send that out? Did I send that out on Facebook that you could actually get, what was it? It was the Windows 8 was released on floppies?
No.
Yeah. No.
It was still available on floppies.
That must be like a truckload.
It was. It was like 7,000 floppies or 1,700 floppy disks. 1,760 floppy disks, I believe.
I'll see you next year. I'm loading Windows.
Or just 4 DVDs.
Yeah, exactly.
It came in a brick. I mean, you would get a brick of floppy disks.
Oh, yeah. I think we did.
I'm sure I put that on. Yeah. I know I put that on.
I think we covered that.
And they just shut it down where you could not buy it anymore on floppy disk.
Wasn't somebody trying to distribute their software on thumb drives too? As a media?
Yeah, there was, I think it was, it's Red Hat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty sure it was, I'm pretty sure it was either Red Hat or one of those.
You know what's getting terrible is our appetite for storage has become so much that those old, as we were moving, I came across a 32 meg SD card. It wasn't even SD, it was MMC.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and I of course I had to put it in to see if there's anything on it. And there was like a document that Julie wrote for 7th grade. I kept that and threw the card away. It's like, what? 32 meg will hold, what, about 4 pictures now?
Yeah, about.
And that used to be big stuff back in the day.
Oh, absolutely.
A friend of mine in Oklahoma City, he works for the government, basically. And he said he finally threw his last 5 1/4 inch disc away. And I said, what am I going to do with the 5 1/4 drive that I have in the storage room now? I do have one. I have one.
There's a box door in stop. That closet.
I had a box of 3.5s, 5 1/4s, and so forth. And I just finally let them go recently.
I will only keep them if I have a machine to use them on, which I do. It's on the garage, but the floppies are in the closet over there.
I don't even have a machine anymore.
We need Tim sitting in that chair.
Yes.
To lend some other historical, but then it'd be 4 old keys sitting around a table.
That could be an interesting show.
Yeah, well, yeah.
4 old geeks. All right, let's go on to another news story. NASA reveals a detailed mission of capturing and bringing an asteroid to Earth. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, nothing.
Where's Bruce Willis when you need him? By the end of the decade, as JFK was fond of saying, NASA will send a robotic spaceship to grab a 40-foot or 12-meter asteroid and bring it close to Earth, placing it in orbit around the moon.
Oh, that's not big.
No. No, I've got a boat bigger than that.
Yeah.
I don't know where to put it.
I mean, even the size of a 747, it's not really that big of a deal.
And then, unless it crashes into the Earth.
Well, no.
If it was a 40-foot asteroid hitting your house, you'd be bummed.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't make it.
It wouldn't make it. I mean, if it started out as 40 feet, it would be more like, you know, a few ounces by the time it actually got to the
Earth. Yeah, we get a nice little shooting star and that's it.
Yep.
It would burn into several chunks.
Pretty much.
Okay, so what's the minimal mass to get to Earth?
I think it's
bus size.
Yeah, it's about the size of a bus or a 747, something like that. It has to be pretty good,
bigger
size.
Than a bus.
Jeff here. That's what we need.
Oh, we do. He's wearing his meteorite men shirt.
I'm wearing my Notkin shirt.
I suppose it would be a different formula depending on the type. If it was a solid iron, or if it was
iron, or the rocky ones burn up faster than the iron ones. The iron ones stay longer. I don't know. I'm
okay.
I We need Jeff.
We need
here.
Jeff.
He would he'd correct me, I'm sure.
I'm not sure if Jeff listens or not.
Right in.
And then we would get an hour dissertation about the nature of meteors.
Or I'll ask Dr. Pamela Gay next time I talk to her.
There you go.
Okay, NASA plans to launch an ARM, that's an acronym for something, ARM robotic spacecraft to rendezvous with, capture, and redirect an asteroid in mass near the end of the decade. Hmm. The spacecraft will redirect it to a stable orbit around the moon called a, quote, distant retrograde orbit.
Okay.
Wow, it's not a DRO.
DRO, yeah.
Usually.
Retrograde orbit, yeah.
Astronauts aboard NASA's Orion spacecraft launched from a space launch system.
Or an SLS.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wasn't that a radio station in Chicago?
SLS.
No, that's WLS. Sorry.
Yeah, WLS.
Which would be a, what, wet launch station? They'll explore the asteroid in the mid-2020s. All right. And they've got lots of concept art, if you follow the link through the show notes, of different ways you can pick up and hurl and tow an asteroid.
That's actually good technology. That's not a bad thing, because we need that technology developed so that we can actually start the mining process of space.
So that's what they want to study it for.
It's basically, I mean, it's
minerals.
They're talking about study, but it's actually going to be the technology of going out there, capturing it, and bringing it back. The successful accomplishment of that lays the groundwork for private space companies to say, hey, we can actually start mining asteroids now and make it, or at least know that we have the technical know-how to do it, whether or not it's going to be cost-effective.
I don't think it would be, because you still have to get the rocket up there, get the it wouldn't be for mining back here. It would have to be for mining out there. SpaceX, if we're going to start a colony, we're going to need, you know, the iron and the palladium and all that stuff.
That's the whole thing that Elon is trying to do with SpaceX.
I knew you were going to say Elon Musk. Oh, absolutely.
Elon's my buddy, hero. I love that man.
I'm sure there was an over-under as to how long it would take before that Elon's name would come up.
All right, who won the pool?
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, that's what SpaceX is trying to do, is make it cheaper to get stuff to and from orbit. And with the reusable rockets that he's using, that could actually cut that cost tremendously. Mm. So the technology to go out and get an asteroid, bring it back, and actually use it to mine, that's huge. I mean, we're talking about a lot of these depleting resources that we have on the planet.
Uh-huh.
We could see a lot of those resources being gathered out in space.
If there was oil out there, it would be done last year.
You bet.
You're right.
There's alcohol out there.
Well, there's gold. There's a lot of things that we're running out of. Uranium, gold, I mean, there's precious metals. There's a lot of things that we need here that we're just kind of running out of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, germanium.
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 In other crazy news, which we seem to have a lot of this week.
A plethora.
A plethora, yes. A Georgia woman has been released after she was arrested for possession of, wait for it, SpaghettiOs.
SpaghettiOs?
In Georgia. Wait a minute. Isn't that one of the 9 food groups in Georgia? Is SpaghettiOs with tater tots?
No, that's Paschettios.
Paschettios.
According to the Gainesville Times, police arrested Ashley Huff, age 23, when they found a, quote, suspicious residue, unquote, they believed to be meth on a spoon inside the car she was riding in.
Yes, because SpaghettiOs look just like meth.
That's right.
I think so.
Well, actually, they're made out of the same thing, so it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Huff was subsequently charged with possession of methamphetamine. Huff repeatedly told the police that she was no way in hell, that the substance was a drug residue, according to the Hall County Assistant Public Defender Chris Von Rossum. Huff was released only after the crime lab finally came back with the results of its substance analysis.
It was spaghetti sauce.
Or something resembling
Because spaghetti
meth.
Sauce looks like meth, too.
Absolutely.
And then what
the orange meth? Those crazy kids, I know that's what they're doing out there, is that orange meth.
What did Von Rossum retort? I think she said it had been SpaghettiOs. Now, here's the sad part. Jordan Richardson, a visiting legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, said police are generally within their rights to make an arrest when there is probable cause, but did raise concerns about the plea deal Huff was considering before the results came back from the crime lab. Quote, the scary thing is, that when she was confronted with jail and a fine, even though she turned out to be innocent, it was easier to take the punishment.
What does that say about the justice system?
Yeah.
Where's my sad trombone when you need it?
I know.
By the time I pull it up, it will be moved on, though.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you don't have any spoons on your front seat when you get pulled over.
That have spaghetti residue in it.
Never mind about the gun or the open beer anymore.
Here we go. Here it is.
All right. Hopefully that was loud enough.
Hopefully. I heard it.
Yeah, we could hear it in the studio. I don't know if it was high enough to make the limiter jump. Turning to the birthday calendar, we have several this week. October 9th is Itsuko Rumki. I love how it's spelled phonetically. Sounds like Itsuko. So I said it right.
Yeah. Very good.
Very good.
Also on October 9th is Mario from New Jersey.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Mario. Two of them on the October 10th date, Victor Cajal. I have not heard from Victor in a very long time, except I think it was to wish George Starcher a birthday on our Friends in Tech mailing list. October 10th is also Garrett Rafal. Bruce Barr. You made a Bruce Barr thing for me years and years ago.
Oh, I do remember
Juice
that.
Juice Barr.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember going into a conference room at work and yelling into the phone so you could record it.
I do remember
that. That's how that was recorded. We have not heard from Bruce, and we drove through Kansas City. Shame on me. His birthday is on October 11th. Happy birthday, Bruce. And finally, October 13th is Jason Schwanz. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, go over to our wiki at chuckchat.com/wiki. Put your name on there. We'll give you a shout out. Hopefully, we're broadcasting that week. We are going to take a real quick break and be right back with more Hacks and Strange Stories, a couple of old odds and ends from Remember When, and tell you what the ISS astronauts are up to. They are nerds just like you and me.
Scooby, sir, what do you think of Technorama?
It does a wonderful job getting my bathroom grout clean.
Chuck and Craig, I haven't talked to you in a while, and I thought I'd say hello and see how Technorama was doing.
Pedro!
Who are you, mister?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes. I think I saw one of your películas, your movies.
Pulp Fiction, Star Wars, and The Incredibles.
I'm just baking another cake for Chuck and Craig. They do such a good job.
Stop wasting all your free time making a mess in the kitchen.
What are you talking about, Mr. Samuel?
I'm talking about snakes on a plane.
Snakes on what? What you mean as snakes?
I know that sounds crazy, but I don't give a damn because snakes on a plane!
I think you're loco, Mr. Jackson. You've been sitting in your bathtub too long. Last time I went in a bathtub, I got bald hair.
For God's sake, quit waxing your big bald head. Just hop on that greasy bike, go get your homeboy, Charles and Craig, and go see Snakes on a Plane. Snakes on a Plane! Snakes on a Plane!
If you ask me, you need to get your geek on.
All right, that was a little dated, but I had to play it just because it's Victor's birthday.
Aw.
We'll have to get a new one where he at least mentions the Avengers.
At least the Avengers. I mean, wow. The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Winter Soldier. I mean, he's pretty much turned that character into forever.
He owns it.
All right, we wondered what you could run Lotus 1-2-3 on. I think I found out what. You could run it on your Samsung Gear watch.
Really?
Because somebody
That's convenient.
Somebody has loaded Windows 95 onto it.
Oh, no way. Yes.
The only problem is, you have to watch the video. It's kind of funny. I'll read the article first. What happens when you give an Android Wear smartwatch to a 16-year-old kid with a bit too much time on his hands? You get Windows 95 on your wrist. Now, we frankly have no idea why you'd load a desktop operating system from 20 years ago onto a Samsung Gear
because
Live.
You can?
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's, yeah, why do they put Linux on everything exactly. under the sun?
That's what I'm wondering. Can you put Linux on it? Can you put Red Hat
oh,
on it?
Oh, I'm
this?
Sure you can.
That's a lightweight operating system. That'd go on there.
The funny part is when he fires this thing up, you can't run anything. He tries running FreeCell and it runs out of memory.
No, but it runs Windows 95.
And it's not very responsive. You hit the start menu and you wait like 3 seconds for the start menu to come up. The video clearly starts out and says, "We are showing you this at 25 times normal speed."
Oh, no.
I'm thinking, wow, this boots really fast. Oh, that's not good. So, yes, you can, but because you can doesn't mean you should.
Precisely.
I just... That's one of those Technorama stories. You see the headline, you go, gotta get it. All right, other bad ideas. You know what? I completely missed. How Uh-oh. Did I do that?
Because it's in Strange Stories.
Hi, Lenny.
Lenny found the studio. Put him in the closet. Five bad selfie devices that should never have been invented.
What in the hell is this?
This is great.
I don't even know.
Let's start with the top. First is the selfie stick.
Now, I've seen this.
Have you watched like Man vs. Wild or Survivor Man? They always have a video camera on a stick.
Right. So, and they have the apparatus over their shoulders and so forth.
Well, this is one that for taking selfies explicitly. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, as if your arm isn't long enough.
Well, I'm afraid that also if the pole is too long, you're going to be very hard to stabilize that thing and you have a nice blurry selfie.
And everybody's head is caught off.
Well, that's true. With the new stabilization, it doesn't matter.
On it,
there
so.
You go.
Then it's a crystal clear head cut off shot. Then we have the selfie hairbrush.
Oh, no.
What? Yes, your camera goes in the backside of this hairbrush. And you can
for heaven's sake.
This just seems like an oxymoron, because wouldn't you want to see how the back of your hair looks?
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that if someone's just not paying too much attention, it's like, oh, I'm just brushing my hair, click, and you, oh, yeah, that's a nice follicle.
Well, you have a mole.
Yeah.
that makes absolutely zero sense right
then
there.
Then there's the selfie hat.
Oh, dear God.
This is a very large sombrero-looking device with an iPad hanging off the edge.
The only thing that's missing is a disco ball. As this,
I would only wear that hat if I was going to the Ascot races.
I would only wear it on the Jetsons.
That is crazy.
Isn't that awful?
I mean, do you need a four-foot hat stuck on your head, really?
If you're at a movie theater, sure.
Well, let's just hope you don't have a windy day.
Then we have the selfie mirror. Now, this is actually an acronym. Stands for the Self-Enhancing Live Feed Image Engine.
Oh, good.
I think because the team who invented it wanted people to have rage aneurysms, they should have realized that mirror that takes pictures and posts them to Facebook is plenty ragey enough.
Wow. I mean, that... The level of wrong there is not even funny.
No, that sounds like a privacy issue.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, you could have the, oh, wow. Now I'm going to be checking all the mirrors in the bathroom.
Open the medicine
cabinet. But they need to put that at Walmart.
What's interesting is that this came up today because I kid you not through probably yesterday when we left here after done painting, we stopped at Target.
Yeah.
I swear to you, the kid in the stall next to me was stuffing product down his pants. I kid you not. He was shoplifting something in there.
Oh, boy.
And I was sitting there the whole time going, you know, I probably should say something about this, but you're always never not completely sure. You know, it's one of those, do you really want to say anything?
Right, because it could be a medical condition
exactly,
or something.
Exactly, or it could be something else, but I
he
swear
he could be
that's
changing his colostomy
on.
Bag or
so,
something.
So, you know, it opens the topic. What about these, you know, throwing those in there for security, these department stores and security cameras? And it goes back to the security camera thing in the bathrooms and changing rooms and dressing rooms and so forth, where shoplifting happens. Something like this that is you can't really tell that there's anything going on other than it's a mirror, right?
Well, I would recommend that they make this Bluetooth enabled, so you'd have to pair it to your phone.
That's what, that would be nice.
What code would you enter to pair that up with? All right. And finally, we have the selfie ring, which just looks wrong in so many ways. I'm not sure why.
Even know what to make of that.
It fits two fingers.
Or nipples. I'm not sure which.
The caption on it says it looks like a sex toy. I wouldn't know how to use.
Pretty much.
But they thought the selfie toaster was pretty cool, so I have to click through to... Oh,
that's far out.
Oh, yeah, toaster. I've seen this.
No, that's a fun novelty.
Well, it's
especially if you're
toaster.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's a dip.
Hey!
Jesus
hey now.
In the toast.
Hey!
I can get Jesus toast anytime I want.
Put the Virgin Mary on it, put it on eBay, make $1 million. Hey, it pays for itself.
It's printing money for all you know.
There you go.
Which version of Mary?
Oh, Mary on the half shell, of course.
Oh, there you go. I bought a jelly.
I thought this was a choice like old Elvis versus new young Elvis postage stamp or something. You had me going. Normally, I would do a shout out to the chat room, but we don't have a chat room going tonight because we're still working through some technical issues. So we have no video component to this. I apologize. We will get to that if you were here a half an hour before showtime.
And the explanation of the board.
You would have heard...
No solo.
30 minutes of test. So we're getting our hands around this thing, and there may be some adjustments that need fine-tuning and somebody to show me how to run the video system.
Yeah, with the occasional, this amp sucks!
We finally got it down to Mike's microphone is fine, his headphones were bad. No, the headphone amp was crazy.
Yep.
Okay. I think I can still do this. That's right, it's the Remember When segment. When we talk about days of old and technologies, well, we were doing that earlier, floppy disks and all that. Mm. This goes back even further. It turns out that the President of the United States was once afraid of the light switches in the White House. Well, we're not talking about Barack Obama. This goes back to Benjamin Harrison in 1891. The first light switches. Now, you got to remember, back then, they didn't have Romex.
They were open. They were open.
Nothing was grounded.
No.
So he was afraid that...
copper.
It says the first president to install electric lighting in the White House was Benjamin Harrison in 1891, but he never touched the light switches himself for fear of being electrocuted. Smart man.
Absolutely.
This was a reasonable fear given how crude household electric wiring could be at the time. Some sources contended that he and his wife would sometimes sleep with the lights on, but that was never substantiated. Most sources claim that his domestic staff would operate the switches for them.
That's why there was such a high turnover there.
On or off, sir? Ah! Please, put on that red shirt before you turn the light on.
That is electricity in the 60s.
This is from White House history.
Electric lighting was installed in the White House in 1891.
Few people at the time had enough faith in electric lighting to use it exclusively. Its use was barely a decade old.
Ooh.
The electrical work at the White House was planned as part of a well-funded project for wiring the State, War, and Navy building next door. Oh, it was an extension cord.
Exactly.
The Edison Company installed a generator for both buildings that was put in the State and War Navy's basement, with the wires strung across the lawn and introduced into the White House under the conservatory. Now, this brings up an interesting concept. Back in the early days of electricity, there was no public grid. There was no public service. If you wanted electricity, you had to have your own generator.
Yeah, you generated your own. Yep. It was all wide open copper wire. I mean,
everything exposed.
Everything was exposed. I mean, it was old knob and
wrapped
tube.
Around those ceramic.
Yeah, around ceramic. Yeah. No, it was called knob and tube. You got the electrician here. and there's still a lot of knob and tube that's still in households today.
My sister just got rid of some.
And
my word.
The reality is, from an electrical standpoint, that is actually better than some of the stuff that's being put in today.
How so?
Because it separates the conductor so extremely that there's very little possibility of shorting out. Even if it has if it's raw exposed wire, it's completely isolated, and it's completely isolated on the ceramic standoffs. So
later they'd have it insulated with tar. And
it was tar wrap.
It went
to tar wrap, and tar wrap was terrible because it dried out. As soon as it dried out, it became a
flame.
One little spark and the thing was just up in flames, had tar to feed it.
So, exactly.
I mean, you just wired your house with an incendiary device is what it is.
I remember seeing that. The house I grew up in was an old Victorian home built in the 1880s and had some of that as well. I mean, you could tell it was converted from gas to electric. The furnace went from coal to oil to natural gas. I mean, there were a number of progressions. So it was kind of fun to watch. But it brings to mind that the same story is kind of holding true today with a lot of people moving their computing stuff to the cloud.
Right.
You know, think of what Amazon is doing. They're kind of the public utility of computing resources. Mm-hmm. You don't need your own generator under your desk anymore, or a server farm or a data center, when you can provision these things in about 10 seconds. Boom, boom. I've got another Windows 2008 R2 server up and running.
Right.
And at really ridiculously cheap prices.
And it's a good point, because the reality is that as we move away from having control of our own data, our own data ports, our own data storage, we become very dependent on that utility. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I haven't decided yet. I mean, it's like all he needs is like one good EMP at that center, and poof.
I still have 10 terabytes in my house.
I have a generator out back.
I've still got my NAS. I'm not giving it up. I mean, I like having control of my
content. Having the physical storage, I have to admit.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't like backing up the physical storage. That's my gripe.
Backing up?
What's backing up? I don't need a backup.
What are these words? I'm not familiar with them.
I got RAID 10. I'm fine.
There are two.
There you go.
You should go to 11.
I can go to 11. That's what I was talking about. I need that fifth drive so I can go to 11.
He's gotta turn up his RAID to 11 because it's better than 10.
That's right.
Way back when, contact lenses used to be made out of glass. Yes,
I remember this.
They did. Yes, they did.
Until recently, if I remember right.
Until very recently, yeah.
Yeah. Originally, they weren't very comfortable either. Now, you got to get a hold of this. Did you know that before the age of plastic, contact lenses were made of glass? It's true and slightly horrifying. Inventors were experimenting with glass-based contacts throughout the 19th century, and Leonardo da Vinci, not the Mutant Ninja Turtle, is often credited as having been one of the first to imagine some of the ideas behind a contact lens in 1508. He was a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of ideas. But when a German doctor at the University of Kiel developed his own glass-based contact lenses in the late 1920s, the American tech press were intrigued. One of the biggest problems, my favorite part, of the contacts developed in the 19th century was that you couldn't really close your eyes.
Oh, dear. Gee, that's a problem.
Since humans like to blink, this posed a problem.
You think?
Imagine, as long as you don't blink, sir, it'll be great. You'll be able to see like you were 20 years old again.
Until your eyes dry out.
Yeah. You just constantly look surprised.
Does anyone have any saline? Dr. L. Heine, which looks really a lot like Heine, but was said to have improved the contact lenses to sit on the eye more comfortably. The future eyeglasses were promised to be the future without the need for eyeglasses at all, provided you didn't mind putting glass in your eyes.
Here's glass in your eye.
I'm shattered. From June 1930 issue of Science and Invention magazine, contact eyeglasses, love that, contact eyeglasses that are worn directly on the eyeball and that do not interfere with the dosing of the eyelids have...
I think it's supposed to be closing.
Closing. I'm sorry. Wow, bad font.
Dosing your eyelids.
Bad font.
At least it's not doping your eyelids.
That's what happens when all your veins collapse and you have to go to your
eyeball. Apparently, I need new glasses or eyeballs. have been invented by Privy Councillor Professor Dr. L. Heine of the University of Kiel. By this invention, the scientist expects to revolutionize ophthalmology. He believes that spectacles and eyeglasses will become superfluous.
And yet, all four of us in the room.
I was just looking at that.
Yep.
Testicles are going to become
I can't wear a,
obsolete? What?
I can't wear them. My eyes are too sensitive.
Spectacles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Spectacles, yes.
I had to make a testicle of myself.
Testicles.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Ben, have you tried contact lenses?
Long ago, and I hated it.
How come?
I kept feeling like I wanted to like look over the contact lens, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, because when you often dip your head down to look over your glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me rather neurotic, more neurotic than I already am already. So I didn't like it very much. I'm just a glasses kind of guy. I'm just an old fogey. What can I say?
How about you, Mike?
No, I can't do them. My eyes are too sensitive. I mean, people, even just eye drops.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like terror. Yeah. Yep. To see the drop getting close to even touching my
eye. And my eyelid is just flickering like that as I'm trying to put the drop in.
I actually, I was grinding metal, and I actually got a chunk of metal in my eye, and they had to go after it with a needle. They had to sedate me in order to do it. It was that bad. I can't have
I
my
got
eyes
one better. In. I used to work with a guy who couldn't even get his eyes to stay open for a picture.
No,
and we take his picture for his ID badge. And it's like, okay, let's try this for the 18th time. 1, 2, 3, and he would know, but you'd still catch it, and his eyes were closed. Oh, like, all right, let's try tricking him. 1, 2, click, 3, and it's still closed. Like, Ryan, how the heck are you doing that?
Wow,
Keith, contacts?
Never. My eyes are too sensitive as well. I always allergies and always rubbing my eyes. I'd ruin them.
I tried them probably about 15 years ago, and it was about the time I went to multifocal lenses. So I thought, all right, let's try them out. Mm. They were really expensive because I needed the toric ones that were weighted or whatever. And one eye was perfectly fine. Couldn't even tell it was there after, you know, the few days or so when you get used to poking yourself in the eyeball, which isn't a natural thing for anybody to do. But I finally got used to that. I think it was the right eye. I could always tell it was just there, and it was like having a booger in your eye, you know, mm-hmm. like it's there. And in reality, it didn't make my vision much better than not having them in. No. So I thought, well, I can see better with glasses, and I don't mind them, especially when the flexible hinges came out.
Yeah.
I can fall asleep in my glasses. I don't care.
I like my glasses because I can put them on the end of my nose, look over the top of them.
Exactly.
And I see distance fine. It's my close up and reading that's bad.
Okay.
So I got these stupid progressives, which I can't drive in because they give me vertigo and I fall off things and I run into things and it's horrible. I don't, there's no point in doing contacts because I'd only need them for reading.
So we have four thumbs down here.
Yeah.
Four thumbs down.
No contacts.
On to the media corner, where we have one more story.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
In the media corner, we have the ISS astronauts are going on at mission number 42. So what do you think they did?
Something related to Douglas Adams, I would imagine.
Absolutely. In the tradition dating back to the space shuttle era. Well, they make it sound like it was the 1300s.
I know. How prehistoric.
Space shuttle era.
NASA has created a mock movie poster to promote its mission. Previous posters have included Reservoir Dogs and Pirates of the Caribbean. But for ISS Expedition 42, the answer to life, the universe, and everything, there could be only one choice.
Of course.
They don't have anybody with two heads on this poster. I'm disappointed.
Wait a minute. That might be the guy in the very, very back. That might be...
Might be Zaphod?
I think that's Zaphod.
Yes, because there's only 2 feet back there.
There's only 2 feet and there's two
that's
heads.
That's Zaphod.
Okay.
That's Zaphod. Yep.
Okay. That's pretty clever. And they did a decent job of it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Nice.
Of course, the astronauts are geeks. Of course they're geeks. I mean, all the science people are really geeks. I mean, that's why you're in it anyway, is just
exactly
because you you want to be that.
Click on the link through the show notes and you will see featured from the left to the right, Terry Virts and Anton Shkaplerov.
Uh-huh, sure.
As Zephod Beeblebrox. Yep. Oh,
there you go.
Very good.
Alexander Summon. Oh, these Russian names are killing me. I should get Craig to read this.
Oh, Hamakavula. I didn't notice that was hung Hamakavula.
No, I didn't realize that.
No.
Oh, well, I got to go back up and look.
Go up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I suppose. Yeah.
Wearing the blue and green.
Yeah.
Yep. And, of course, right out front is Barry Butch Wilmore as Arthur Dent.
Mm-hmm.
Elena Serova as Ford Prefect. Really?
That's Ford?
That's Ford?
I don't believe it.
No, that's not
Ford. I'm having weird feelings. Samantha Cristoforetti as Trillian, and apparently...
Robonaut.
She's the one who unveiled the poster on Google Plus.
Oh, she is?
Yeah, she's the one who let loose the poster in the public. Guest star Robonaut as Marvin the Paranoid Android. Who's Robonaut? Oh, I know. That's the humanoid robot that they're bringing up to start doing tests.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, far out.
I think he's already up there, though. He's just not turned on. That didn't come out right.
Have you turned on your robot today?
I have an electric probe for that.
Oh.
And on that note, we're going to sign off for the show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for show 412. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, no problem.
Thank you, Keith.
You're welcome.
We shall do this again soon. If you want to get in touch with us, call the listener line 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. We would love to hear from you. We've got feedback. We've got people to talk about if you heard something wrong in this show and you feel very strongly about it, or you have opinions that you want to voice. Let us know by calling the listener line or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. You can also find out many more other ways to catch us if you go to the website at chuckchat.com/technorama. Get in touch with us. Thank you to Mad Marv for all the great blog content and everyone who sent us contributions and listened to this show. We love you. Until next time. All right, who's doing it? Who's our pretend Craig? Ben?
101.
Wait, I didn't give you the cue yet.
Oh.
Tell a friend about Technorama and give me a binary high five.
Now, 101.
We need Craig back.